This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And yes, this is The Deep Dive, and I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and we're coming to you once again with another interesting and I hope illuminating conversation. Our guest today will be Adam Thal. And before we start our conversation with him, I think it's imperative we really must pause for a moment of reflection. There have been some extraordinary not in the pleasant sense of the word events in the last couple of days. We're recording on Monday afternoon, so these events are fresh in our mind. The first was the killings on the campus of Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island, in the United States. The second, of course, was the massacre at Bondi Beach in Sydney, in Australia, the lighting or the celebration of the first night for Hanukkah, in which numerous people were killed, others were wounded, and one heroic moment occurred as well on the part of somebody who wrestled a gun away from a shooter, proceeded to mobilize him. And the third, of course, was the death of Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle. For those who don't know the name Rob Reiner, all in the family, he was the straight man for the most part, Meatball, as he was usually termed, in a television show which revealed the cultural, the intellectual, the political cleavage in America in the 1960s and 70s in an extraordinary production. He went on to become a director of films that really touched the heart. So a moment of reflection for all these needless deaths. And now we'll pick up our conversation with Adam Thal, a South African film producer and executive producer at the Star Film Company. And he describes it as a production house, and I'm quoting what their publicity says, I didn't make this up, that is modestly defined as a fine-tuned, badass, unafraid, applauded, and accoladed film production house. I do hope Icasa doesn't get angry with us for using those phrases, but never mind. He goes on to say, we at the Star Film Company, it was established in 2003, by young guns, Adam Thal and Ryan Poole. The company has grown in a way that aspiring filmmakers would only dream of. Adam is a South African producer for works like The Heart is a Muscle, which is South Africa's Oscar submission as a foreign film, Academy Award nominated short film, The Last Ranger, not about the Lone Ranger and Tonto, but about preservation. I looked at that and I said, what? A South African film about the Lone Ranger? How can that be? And it isn't, of course. Conservation and Trauma. Let me scroll down my notes a little bit further here. Got to have notes in this business. You have to know what you're doing. The Heart is a Muscle, new film, powerful drama exploring father-son bonds, forgiveness and reconciliation, which has won multiple awards. The Last Ranger, about a young girl and a ranger fighting rhino poachers, highlighting conservation and community issues. Bangarang, a political drama about a jobless graduate during election violence. And two others, which I guess should be mentioned as well, Legends and Legacies, an 8-part documentary on the South African Jewish community, and Winnie, a documentary exploring the extraordinary, problematic, and difficult life of Winnie Madikizela Mandela. All kinds of awards are coming his way. Adam, I thank you for joining us. I'm pleased that you're with us.
Thank you for having me, Brooks.
No, sorry to interrupt. I have to ask this question because it'll plague me forever if I don't. Are you by some chance, some remote chance, related to the legendary Hollywood producer Irving Thalberg?
I would love to claim credit, but unfortunately, no.
Okay, because your full surname and the first half of his surname are the same, and sometimes people, at the behest of immigration authorities, change their names or circumstances happen. And I just figured maybe it was kind of like hereditary that you went into the film business.
Yeah, absolutely. I must say that I've researched the family name quite thoroughly, and I can safely say it's been Thal since at least 1890, the 1890s. So I think all the Rosenthals and et cetera, come from me, not me from them.
Okay, but I've scratched that itch and we'll move on. I mean, I thought it would have been an extraordinary moment if you'd said, "Oh yes, he was my great uncle or something."
That would have been cool, wouldn't it?
Would have, not to be. But so then tell me, how did you get interested in or involved in professionally active in filmmaking? And where did you study? What was your personal trajectory? Does it mimic that of Steven Spielberg's doppelganger in his film The Fablemans? Is there some sort of parallel there?
I definitely have the cliched start to my career where I was literally watching films from a young age, E.T. being one of them. So there's the Spielberg reference. And when a film takes you on a journey and captures you for those 1.5, 2 hours, and just takes you out of this world and transports you into this magic realm. It was the most incredible experience for me as a viewer at that stage. I must have been about 6 or 7 at that stage when I just got encaptured by filmmakers or by films. Then when I was 12, we had a young man come to our primary school who taught us, who literally he brought a handy cam with him because that was the thing at that stage. And he was teaching us how cameras work and the magic of filmmaking or the secrets of filmmaking and how to create the scenes. And it just opened my mind. And that's what got me hooked from that moment. And then through high school, I went to King David Linksfield and they had a TV station, for lack of a better word, called Glance. Which was run by the late Gary Block. And I just took to that like a duck to water. And wherever I could, I was filming, I was editing, I was making these videos for the school, which were shown to the other pupils at assemblies every second Friday, every fortnight. And I absolutely loved that. And I was filming all the family holidays, all that kind of stuff. But when I left school, I think like any typical young Jewish pupil would do, my parents said I should get a degree before I attempt my passion. And so I went
Would
to,
you be a doctor or a lawyer too?
yes, exactly. So I went into a degree of electrical engineering at WITS, of which I can safely say I hated every single minute of.
I'm sorry for laughing, but I've heard this tale before.
And I think after about 9 or 10 months of slogging through, my parents kind of saw how I was hating it and just wanted to make movies. And they allowed me to kind of follow my passion. So I dropped out of the degree at WITS. And for the remainder of that year, I went to work for SuperSport. And as at SuperSport, I was a cameraman and a cable basher, just trying to work my way into these live events. And I got to film and be part of rugby games, boxing, and golf as a cameraman and assistant when where I could. And then the next year, got to enroll into AFTA, which is the South African School of Film, which the year I attended became a degree. So I actually got the year of going to WITS allowed the course to become a degree, which made everyone happy. So I ultimately got my degree and my passion.
So you got the diploma and your parents were pleased and everything's right with the world. We're speaking with Adam Thal, filmmaker extraordinaire, whose parents wanted him to do something like a doctor or a lawyer or at least a dentist, but instead he pursued an independent path and became a filmmaker. And we'll be right back with the deep dive after this message.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooks Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector, and my guest today, Adam Thall, filmmaker, film producer, honored filmmaker and film producer. Let's talk about your films and your entry into the film world. Domestically or internationally, who are your film icons? Who are the people you look up to? Maybe not the people you trained with per se, but the people whose content or style or approach, auteurs or whatever, who would they be? Who are the people that, you know, when you think about film, you go, ah, I want to be like?
So there's multiple, but I'll share them all with you and the various reasons for it. I would safely say the films that have made the biggest impact on me as a human have been the Jerry Bruckheimer films. And now my role models are producers. I'm a producer, so a lot of the audience don't really know the names of famous producers, but some of the films they've made are incredible. So number one being Jerry Bruckheimer. And funny how Jerry Bruckheimer's late partner was a guy, Don Simpson. And when the films were created, it was always Bruckheimer Simpson Productions. When I started my company in 2003 with my late partner, Ryan Poole, we were always referred to as the South African Bruckheimer Simpson. And I don't need to go into the whole story, but I always looked up to Jerry Bruckheimer and Ryan looked up to Don Simpson. And our paths, if you follow how their paths were, have actually been quite similar, which is quite scary. No, we haven't made the Bad Boys films or The Rock or any of those crazy films, well, incredible films. But unfortunately, Don Simpson passed away tragically. He was the party animal of the duo. Unfortunately, my late business partner, Ryan, passed away tragically. And he was the party animal of our duo. Jerry Bruckheimer went on to keep the legacy going and build an even bigger legacy. And I'm hoping, for my sake and for Ryan's sake, that I'm doing the same in our little setup.
And
so,
South Africa. Oh, sorry, go ahead. Excuse me.
Yeah. So that's definitely role model number one in filmmaking. But then one of the most incredible producers that I've been lucky enough to sit with is a guy, Avi Lerner. Avi Lerner did things very differently. And so Avi Lerner is actually an Israeli American South African producer. So he at least used to spend a lot of his time in Cape Town. He runs a incredible mothership called New World, which had studios and offices in South Africa. But I was luckily enough to shoot a TV commercial in Bulgaria at his studios in Sofia.
That seems perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. And he happened to be there at the time. And for some unknown reason, he took a liking to me, I guess, because he's a tough cookie as a producer, as an Israeli, as we all know. And yeah, he took a liking to me and we sat and he took me through his business model, which was quite unique and not the way that young filmmakers look at the industry, but he made a huge success of his career and has a multi-million dollar company that produces action films. And I don't like using the word because it's not always the case, but he creates B-grade films, which he's proud of. And he created people like Steven Seagal and like all your action heroes. But what I loved about his model is he owns the projects that he works on. And so he has this asset library of films, and that sparked an interest in my path of feature films and TV series.
Yeah, I mean, we all, not all, but I tend to say B-grade, you know, B-grade films, you know, sort of schlocky things. They take up a big chunk of the market, and worldwide, they have an enormous market outside of the country in which they're created because they transcend language.
Absolutely, 100%.
So,
So funny you say that because his biggest market, or one of his biggest markets, is China, is the
yeah.
Far East.
Well,
And
no, I mean, China is a huge market and, relatively speaking, still open for all kinds of new work by people that we don't know about yet.
absolutely, 100%. So I've tried to combine the two models into one business. That is my goal as a producer, executive producer.
Suddenly flashing before me in my mind was the Gene Hackman character in Get Shorty.
I prefer to be known as the Steve Martin character in Gone Blank Now, in one of my favorite films ever, about a producer trying to make a film. And that's where I see myself.
Well, I mean, Hackman got into all manner of trouble by trying to, shall we say, overextend himself just a little bit, and he had some habits which he couldn't support. Other than that, he was a king in his universe.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about now domestically. I mean, South Africa does have a film industry, and I was fascinated to read about a character. I hope you know something about Isidore Schlesinger.
Oh, wow. Yeah. My ultimate project as a filmmaker is to make the story about him.
That would be because that story is. I keep saying to people, now there is a film to be made about somebody like that. Shows up to sell insurance policies to gold miners and ends up doing miraculous things, major films with thousands of extras, hires a whole town's worth of extras,
Yeah.
builds massive buildings, creates sports clubs and citrus farms, and then dies. Eventually unknown.
Yeah, quite incredible. I've actually been doing some research trying to find some living relatives of his. New York, I don't think any of them are in South Africa anymore. And like you say, he died unknown, but what he created for the South African industry, if not the entire film industry, was remarkable. I was reading one of the sections in the book that was written about him. I'm probably going to botch this up, but he was making a film, I think, about the Great Trek, or one of the Boer Wars, or one of the big wars. And he recreated the scene with thousands of people, and they actually started shooting each other.
By accident or intention, yeah. Saudi
Yeah.
forgot to take the live bullets out of the rifles.
Yeah. And he made the decision to carry on shooting, filming. And just a scene like that in a film is unbelievable. It's wow. But yes, this man created our industry.
We're talking about a book by the author's name is Ted Botha, and it's called Hollywood on the Highveld, and it's currently available, and it's well worth a read just because of the sheer improbability of most of it.
Yeah,
And
and Killarney Mall was his studio.
and the Whitehall apartment building in Killarney, he built that, and
Yeah.
by the time he died, he was living in 19 rooms on the top of the old Carlton Hotel. Quite an extraordinary thing. Your own favorite local films or locally made films, what might they be?
That's a hard question because I like my own films the most.
That's understandable. You like your own creations. Best of all, you wouldn't have made them.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say as a role model, local role model, Anant Singh and the films he's made under the Video Vision banner would definitely be it. I love the Leon Schuster films, but that's slapstick comedy, which just kind of took over our market. And sadly, up until now, has been the only films that have been successful in our country. When I say up until now, up until probably 5, 10 years ago, because he was able to capture our entire market. The film industry has been a very, very difficult industry prior to the streamers coming into play. And when I say difficult industry, to A, get films financed, but B, to make money from film. I remember when I was in my third year of film school, I never wanted to be that individual that was trying to bum a cappuccino or a cup of coffee at the local cafe in Melville, because that's the kind of persona that filmmakers had. And I think that's why I started my career, and I'm still proudly in television commercials because,
Well, there is somebody who has made some extraordinary films who, in effect, is your role model in that, Ridley Scott. He got his start in commercials, which taught him discipline and as a filmmaker. And you can see the impact in his films of that early business with the commercials. You have to deliver enormous quality in 30 seconds or a minute, or else it's no good. We're going to have to take a short ad break. We're speaking with Adam Thall, filmmaker, producer, film historian almost at this point. I think we're beginning to get there. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host, and we'll be back right after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we're back, and this is The Deep Dive. And I'm speaking with Adam Thall, and your host, of course, is Brooke Spector. And we're talking about the way in which you get into the production, the producing of film, and Adam saying he never wants to be that guy hanging around in a coffee shop in Melville, begging for somebody to pick up the tab for a double cappuccino and a croissant. If you just read my script and if you just read this proposal. But let's talk a little bit about financing and distribution of independent films and the difficulty therein. Just how hard is it, and how do you do it? I mean, I'm not going to bore you with my film project that I want to do someday. I'll talk to you separately offline. But it's a wonderful tale about America meets Africa back in history. But we'll get to that at some other point. But to the question of financing and distribution of independent filmmaker work, just how do you do that?
So I would probably say the hardest part of filmmaking is raising the capital, is raising the funds to make the film. And I don't want to take away from the creative side and from my director and my entire crew, but obviously without the money, you can't make the film. So one of the things that I learned from Avi Lerner when I was in Bulgaria was you don't always have to look at the $100 million films. You don't always have to look at the A-grade actors that cost $20 million per film. You need to tell a story that captures the audience. And that's all it's about. So low budget filmmaking, which is the better word for it, is indie filmmaking. Is
That's a nice, I like that.
Yeah. So I like to see myself as an indie filmmaker, indie film producer, because I look at projects that are contained, projects that you can create for lower budgets, that still have that that energy and excitement to them for the audience. But it's twofold, because the cheaper you make the film, the more money you make from the sales of the film. So I've always thought, you know what? I don't need to be walking down the red carpet at the Oscars. I don't need to be walking down the red carpet at the top film festivals in the world. I want to make films, and I want to make films as a business. I want to make films that entertain, and I want to be known as the guy that's made these incredible projects. And so I started by self-funding very low-budget indie films where we create and we maintain full ownership of the films, of the projects.
Mm-hmm.
Which allows us to tell the story we want to make. And yeah, it could be from my 20 plus years of experience in TV commercials, like you said about Ridley Scott and his brother, Tony. But we know what the audience want, and we know what's viable. We know how to create it. And we're able to do it on our own, and then look at licensing the film or the series to a broadcaster, to a streamer, and turning it into a business, but also building that asset base of projects so that you're not just making a project for someone else, you're making your own art. I don't know if it's luck. I don't know if it's choosing the right project, but we've been able to license all our projects two streamers, two broadcasters on a continual basis and make a business out of it and make money out of it. And it's been a fantastic career move so far.
Yeah, I mean, when I talk about South African films, I'm not thinking of the Oh Shucks and Schuster type things, although everybody seemed to like them at one point. But I mean, give me your reaction to my favorite South African film. This may surprise you. Taxi to Soweto, which came out about, I think it was 1991, which was this exuberantly optimistic film. And it had a whole series of not big stars, but really good actors, mostly from stage, perhaps a few film and television roles. But it was this outrageous tale that if you believe the first bit, then the rest of the story makes sense. And it comes to a conclusion. No one gets killed. Nobody gets hurt. Everybody gets to dance at a nightclub by the time it's all over.
I'm embarrassed to say it's one film I haven't seen, but I know of the film.
Go find it. Go watch it.
No, absolutely. And I know when you say that the cast or the talent of the project were some of our best talent in our country. So I am aware of the film. I haven't seen it, unfortunately. So I feel like a failure now on your show.
Oh, no. I feel like an evangelist on behalf of this film, because I've been telling people about it for years, precisely because I thought it caught the mood of the country. On the one hand, the terrible possibilities of, you know, descending into the pit, and on the other hand, the possibility of, hey, it might work out. It could possibly happen the way we hope. And they all get, truly, they all end up at a nightclub in Soweto and they get to dance and sing. And it doesn't look silly or schlocky or anything else. It works as a film. Next time I talk to you, you're going to have watched it and we're going to discuss it in depth.
100%. I will make a point of it.
Now, tell me about two films in particular, The Heart is a Muscle. Is there a biographical element in there in some way, shape, or form, or is it purely a fictional piece of work?
It's a fictional piece of work based off a situation that my director, my writer director Imran, encountered. Uh-huh. So the story takes place at a family braai in the Cape Flats, where the son goes missing, and the film is basically about the journey and the father's overcoming of finding his son. In that environment. So Imran was in a situation where he was at a friend's braai and the friend's son went missing. And he just noticed how you go into fight or flight mode, how you, as a parent, as a friend of the parent, as an auntie, as an uncle, deal with the situation at that moment. But it's, the story is definitely a fictional story, and where we put this experience of his in the Cape Flats as a setting, because the Cape Flats has never been portrayed as a good location, as a human location. It's always the negative side to it. So we decided to put this human story about a father and a son's journey in this environment and show the world this location for what it is and the people for who they are.
And the second one, Legends and Legacies. It's a multi-part work. Somebody must have come. I can't imagine you simply wrote a check to cover the cost of all this ahead of time. There must have been.
To be honest, Brooks, that's not my project.
Oh, well then how did it work its way onto the bio I got? Oh goodness. I'm sorry.
No problem. I'd rather be honest than claim someone else's work.
No. We're going to double check how we got that wrong. but then the other one then, a film about Winnie Madikizela Mandela.
Also not mine.
Goodness. Well, anyway.
I can tell you some of my projects.
Please, let's do that. I think that's much more.
So based on the Winnie Mandela story kind of thing, the closest I have to that, my claim to fame, is a documentary we did on Springbok rugby captain Siya Kolisi. which was basically a documentary about his life, his journey of where he's come from, where he is now, based off his book Rise, the Sia Khaleesi story. So we were commissioned by Roc Nation, who were his managers at the time, create this documentary about him, which is phenomenal. And to have kind of spent so much time with him, with the Springboks, with his ex-wife Rachel, and telling the story of rags to riches and who he became and the legend he now is has been phenomenal. And we've been very fortunate enough to travel to quite a few film festivals with this project. And we won an amazing award at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York, which was the Audience Award, which, in my opinion, is one of the best because it's the award where the audience vote for the best film of the festival. And so we won that award in Tribeca, and then we won amazing award at the Monaco Sports Festival in Monaco, which was also phenomenal. And I think that's the exciting part of my career, is now getting to experience all these film festivals and playing with some of the best filmmakers globally.
Adam, we're going to take another break. The piper has to be paid. As a business person, you understand that. Take these commercials and station IDs and all the rest of it, and we'll be back after that. You're listening to The Deep Dive with Adam Paul, film producer. Some of the films we talked about, turns out they weren't his, but that's okay. We're talking about the ones he did do. And I'm your host, Brooke Spector. And we'll be back after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. We're speaking with Adam Thall, the Star Film Company. And I'm your host, Brooke Spector. And we're talking about making films, making your own films about stories you want to tell. Owning the property and not being beholden to avaricious financiers out there who want you to change the nature of the work or add a different character or change the ending or make it more violent or less violent or something like that. But do you ever get investors? And I don't know if you know the film A Boy Called Twist, which came out 20 years ago, maybe here. It was a retelling on the Cape Flats of the Oliver
Of
Twist
the twist.
story. And it was financed by crowdfunding. Everybody who ponied up 1,000 rand got to be mentioned as an assistant producer. And at the end of the film, if you watched really carefully in a nanosecond, your name would flash past on the list of all the other assistant producers. And I didn't give any money, but I was fascinated to see lots of people whose names I actually knew, who clearly had been smitten with the idea of being part of the film industry. When you talk about your self-funding model, your ownership of the product and the way in which it's being put together, does it ever occur to you that it would be easier somehow to get a financial backer to just lavish you with a check and say, make that film, my friend, go make it.
So I must first comment that A Boy Called Twist was one of my best films, and I'm actually very close to the director, Tim Green.
I got it
And
finally.
one of my first films that I made in 20 during COVID, actually in 2020, was with Tim. He directed the film for me. It's called The Fury, and that was picked up by Amazon Prime. The license period with Amazon Prime's just literally come to an end, and we're relicensing the film to another streamer. So, I've just had to show my connection to Tim and that film, because the way he raised that money, 1,000 people, 1,000 rand each, was phenomenal. And that is the level you have to look at as a filmmaker to get your story told, which is incredible. But to answer your question, Brooks, I do have a few investors or wealthy friends or colleagues or acquaintances that I have kind of leaned into. I think the one thing I do need to mention, which has been my key word ever since I started making films is the word collaboration. Filmmaking is not an I thing. Filmmaking is a we thing. And you need to be able to collaborate with the right people where you can all add your best strengths to make that film or that project even better. So, a lot of the projects I've worked on have been collaborations with other filmmakers, with some investors, with whoever it is at the time. But specifically when it comes to investors, we recently did a television series. So films have always been the things I've been doing where it's a once-off project. But we decided we wanted to try a TV series, which is a total different kettle of fish. Where you're now creating 6 to 8 to 12 episodes, with eventually the hope of a season two or season three, and in some cases a season 17. A TV series takes a lot more logistics, it takes a lot more time, it takes a lot more money. And so we looked at the series where we found three unbelievable investors, total private investors that we sold the idea to, that came on with the passion of A, helping us, but B, wanting, I guess, wanting to be closet filmmakers with their name in lights.
Was the
And
key,
we,
I think.
yeah, and we created this TV series the same way I've been making films, but on a bigger scale. So instead of the 3, 4, 5 million rand, we now had 12, 13, 14 million rand. We did the same model where we created the show, we owned the show, we got to a stage. Once again, there's always luck involved in filmmaking in any business, I guess, where Netflix got sight of our project while we were still editing it and they wanted to license it. And before we finished editing, we had a 7-year global Netflix license signed for the project, which was the most incredible experience to give our investors such a return in such a short frame of, in such a short window, and get our series licensed on Netflix. So that was an incredible experience, and it got our investors excited that there is investment opportunity in the entertainment industry or in filmmaking, in TV series.
Your investment model was not Mel Brooks's The Producers, obviously.
No. But that's another iconic film, musical, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
There are a couple of versions of it, but I mean, you create this stage play that is so improbable that it will fold on the first night because of its character. And everybody will lose their shirts and they'll make out like bandits, except that it becomes a roaring success and now they're in trouble because they've sold 10,000% of the film.
Yeah.
And other than that, it's everything's fine. I have the world's most modest involvement in two feature films. One was a Japanese film by a filmmaker by the name of Beat Takeshi, was trying to get a visa to the U.S. to do the film in Los Angeles. And they'd already spent money and hired people and did all this. And suddenly getting a visa became impossible because he ticked a little box that said, had you ever been arrested? Way back years ago, he had been arrested in a bar fight, throwing a chair at somebody. And I had to throw myself at the mercy when I was still working for the embassy. I throw myself at the mercy of the people who hand out visas and say, you really, really must do this. There are hundreds of people waiting in Los Angeles to go to work and, give it. So I, on the list of assistant producers, 1 nanosecond, my name. So I've taken that to heart.
Great.
And when the film The Last Samurai was being done, they handed me a
One of
copy
my
of this.
best films ever. Sorry.
They handed me a copy of the script, and I thoughtlessly explained to them that they had the story wrong, that the person they're really portraying is in fact a Japanese would have been samurai, rather than an American adrift in Japan in the early Meiji period. And that ended my involvement with that film right from the beginning, right from the script stage onward. I was no longer a part of their process. But I felt vindicated. At least I'd made history correctly. We've been talking about financing a bit, but what it does say to me in the closing minutes is that the whole way of putting a film into the market is so different from the way that happened when I was young, watching films. I mean, your major market is streaming services. Your major market is downloading the films, stuff that was unheard of 25 years ago. And that obviously has changed the way a producer approaches their film, question mark?
100%, yes. Obviously, we all want the silver screen. We all want to take our films to the cinema. And we want the audience to have their popcorn and Coke experience watching our film on the big screen. Specifically in this country, the market of cinema goers is minuscule. This is my business at the end of the day, and I need to look at the best or easiest return for all of my projects. And unfortunately, cinema in South Africa is not a viable business model. You still go to cinema, but you have to couple it with a few other options. I'll use The Heart is a Muscle, which is our current film. Firstly, the film was selected as South Africa's entry to the Academy Awards for Best Foreign Language Film. But we've got a distribution strategy where we are going to cinema in South Africa for a two-month period, about 52 screens, but at the same time are still playing festivals, at the same time are still structuring deals for broadcasters and streamers. And we do have a locked-in deal with one of the local streamers that as soon as it finishes the cinema run, it goes straight to the streamer. So we're able to make it into that viable business, but still keep a bit of the, I guess, the excitement of being on the big screen possible. But ultimately, yeah.
We're going to have to take another final break, and we'll be back to sum up and wrap up things. This is The Deep Dive, and we're speaking with Adam Thal, film producer and self-financing film mogul, and we'll be back just after these messages.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are indeed speaking with Adam Thal, and this is The Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. We have just a couple of minutes, and I interrupted Adam when you were explaining the intricacies of your film distribution system so that it gets to the eyeballs of people who will watch it and say, oh, wow, that is tremendous. I want to see more. I want to see it again. I want to see a more work by his people. What's next in your roster of tricks? What are you going to do aside from the story of Isidore Schlesinger, which I will be the first person to come watch? Trust me.
Yeah, no, that's really, really an exciting project. It's definitely not a low budget indie film, but a story that I am dying to tell. So it's definitely on the cards. I am in development on quite a few other projects, which are really exciting. One specifically about the legendary boxer Brian Mitchell and his kind of history with the late Jacob Morake. Also a legendary boxer, but we're telling the story about that situation in time. And yeah, we're still shopping the films around. Luckily enough, we're still going to festivals. We've got a fantastic one in Santa Barbara coming up in February, for The Heart is a Muscle. And yeah, I was fortunate enough to be at the Oscars for The Last Ranger in March, which we didn't unfortunately win, but it gives me more passion and drive to get back there and win the Gold Man. So I'm trying to take a little bit of Avi Lerner's business model and a little bit of everyone else, but it's Jerry Bruckheimer specifically, and turn it into my own model where I can create indie films and still win Gold Men on the red carpet.
Ultimately, just maybe as a closing thought from me, it isn't necessarily the big money film which is the one that's best. It's the story, and it's the people who deliver the story, the way in which that story reaches out and touches the viewer. that matters much more than the elaborate sets and the million dollar casting.
100%, yeah.
We have been speaking with, and entertainingly speaking with, Adam Thall of the Star Film Company. And I have learned more about the making of films in the last 40 some minutes than I ever have in any equivalent period of time with all the people I've talked to in my life. This has been a real pleasure. I'm going to get a hold of you somehow, and I'm going to share with you my film that I want to make somehow, some way. And you will be excited about it, and then you will tell me, there is no way we can make it for less than X million dollars. And I'll say, okay, all right, you can find it. I'm sure you're good.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your time, Brooks. It's been a pleasure being on your show.
If somebody wants to get a hold of you, the Star Film Company is connected on the internet, obviously. What's the address?
So my web address is starfilms.tv. And if you Google me, all my details are there. So feel free to send any fantastic script ideas my way.
There you go, folks. If you've got one in your closet ready to roll, get a hold of Adam. He's ready and waiting. This has been The Deep Dive, and we have had great fun, I think, talking with Adam Thall of the Star Film Company. And I look forward to seeing more of your work in the future. This is Brooke Spector for The Deep Dive, and we'll be back again next time with another person, another topic in the arts, in music, in literature, in politics, in international economics, maybe even the tax system someday. This is The Deep Dive, and have a good weekend. You be careful out there.